ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. This is Red Ice TV. I'm Henrik. It's good to have you with us. As always, subscribe to Red Ice TV on YouTube. Help spread the link to the show to your friends, of course. Help us get new subscribers and reach more people. That's the best way you can help out if you appreciate and like the show. We have Jim Gove back with us today. He returns to the show to discuss his new book, The New Church Ladies. They were kind enough to send me a copy. Excellent book, a lot of fun. We're going to speak more about this, obviously, as you can figure out due to this. Then Jim is an author, if you're new to his work. Thank you for returning, Jim. It's good to have you here again.
Hey, thank you. And I'm going to say 1589. I'm purer than any of you.
1589. Cool. Yeah, judging from the Iron Cross there, you're cutting it close, right? So
yeah, this is, here's where I draw the line. Now, this is very similar to Iron Cross. It's mentioned in the book as a story that was originally published in Vice magazine, where I got into some street scuffles with anti-racist skinheads in Portland. And they were, I guess, like, they're, you know, very similar to what Antifa is doing now. They were just violent shock troops to enforce cultural Marxism. But they hassled me about the Iron Cross, and I said, it's a white thing. Why don't you punch me? So they punched me. And I fought back the first time, and then the second two times. I was still on parole. It's like, I'll box you. But, you know, let's have a debate. They're too stupid. They're so fucking stupid. But they're all thinking, oh, Nazis only understand violence. Like, well, here's the Nazi. Let's talk.
I know.
And they would never do it when it wasn't 6-on-1.
Of course not. No, they're cowards. That's the other point of this, you know.
Sure, there's some tough ones, you know, just some knuckleheads. But, yeah, in general, they would not talk about anything. They had made their mind up, and they would not fight.
Yeah, this is not about talking, not about discussing. Hey, Jim, let's talk a bit about the term then, the new church ladies. You do describe it in the beginning, but of course some people that are old enough might remember this.
Could it be safe?
Right, so we have Saturday Night Live, right? That's where it all comes from. Dana Carvey. If you look at Saturday Night Live today, I believe they're more or less doing the same thing. They're still just bashing Christians and conservatives, right?
That's exactly what they've become. I mean, this was, what, late 80s, when you still had Orange County, California housewives who would see, you know, satanic messages in their breakfast cereal. Or they had the McMartin trial where he was a creepy-looking, he looked like he could play a child molester in a movie. But they ran a children's school, and there were all these satanic rumors about tunnels underground and the naked, you know, juice game and all this stuff. But turned out they were completely innocent, or they at least didn't convict them. But there was a satanic panic in the 80s. And, you know, now that's been, Christians are, I guess, severely on the decline. So now they're just panicking about racism and sexism and homophobia and Islamophobia and all these made-up mental illnesses that don't really exist. And in most cases, just manifestations of their survival instinct from the haters. My old beef has always been with moralists. I grew up Catholic and apparently had a very bad experience relative to some other people, but the nuns were just relentless and very unpleasant people. And I've sort of formed a philosophy that the more people beat you over the head with morality, the more you have to watch out for them in daily life, because they're going to be nasty individuals. People use morality like a club to just abuse other people with. And this whole thing where they're just looking for Satan or looking for racism everywhere, like microaggressions. I don't even think, like, the nuns, I guess they had venial sins. So, yeah, microaggressions are maybe like the new church ladies' version of venial sins.
Someone said they invent microaggressions because there aren't any macroaggressions, right?
Macroaggressions left. That's why this makes you a Nazi immediately, even though this says 1914 on it when Nazis exist. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. They've made up their minds, you know?
Yeah, so, the term, actually, since I'm partially senile, I actually unconsciously, I would never consciously plagiarize somebody, but I read an interview that Jack Donovan did, and he mentioned, oh, these people are like new church ladies. And I saw that, and I guess it sunk into my brain, and it bubbled up a couple years later, and I had an article called The New Church Ladies. Jack Donovan saw that, and he's like, yeah, Jim Goad calls them the new church ladies. So Jack, I guess, is partially senile, too. He thought that I came up with it. But I did a little research before I put the book out. It's like, oh, Jack came up with the term, so I credit him at the end.
sounds good. You know, if you look at some of the, I guess it was the National Lampoon, right? They're kind of like the intellectual vanguard of the Saturday Night Lives and stuff like that, right? But they've been doing this spiel now, this shtick for like, you know, what, 20, 30 years? It seems that if I do check in on the YouTube channel, all they know how to do is like attack Sean Spicer and Trump. I guess that's like their idea of fun. I don't know. Do you check in with Saturday Night Live anymore?
I haven't watched Saturday. I thought the first season was great. the one with Chevy Chase on it, and not because of Chevy Chase, because of Michael O'Donoghue, who, he pioneered a really mean, like, death-obsessed sense of humor that I guess I copped some from him. There was a book done about Michael O'Donoghue, and, like, in the last page, the writer nominated two heirs apparent to him. One was Howard Stern, one was me. But, yeah, all they do are attack safe targets now. And there's nothing edgy or risky about anything they do. If they, I mean, I've said many times, they need people like Sam Hyde or people who are actually attacking the sacred cows. Trump's obviously not a sacred cow, guys. Everybody bashes the shit out of him.
Yeah.
It's safe. You get a promotion. Bash people who you'll get fired for. Then you'll be edgy once again. But I mean, it's early Sunday Night Live was really good. I mean, I've seen clips here and there. Lena Dunham was on, and they had a men's rights advocate, and they were all emasculating him, and this was supposed to be funny, that fat, disgusting bowl of pudding.
I know, it's awful. Disgusting. But aren't they, I mean, there is a substantial subculture rising now that is actually, you know, hearkening on SJWs and all their bullshit and their, you know, the cringe compilations and the fails and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's catching on, right?
I would hope so. I think economic conditions were, you know, whatever they call late-stage capitalism, we're at the end of an empire in a lot of ways. And I think people got fat and lazy and soft. I think harsher conditions, you're not going to have any social justice warriors and people need clean drinking water. I'd rather that not happen, but hopefully will. Or maybe they'll just be mocked back into their safe spaces. That would be cool, too. But without a societal collapse, just give it back to them. I've said many times, people attack you with what's going to hurt them. If humiliation, and call their employer, tell their parents what they're into. I mean, it's two wrongs don't make a right, I guess, according to laws of logical fallacies. But that's what will work against them. Humiliate them. If they try to like go after you with, you know, shaming, I'm unshameable. I mean, there's things I feel bad about, but it's internally. You know, no one can tell me to be ashamed about something. These people, I think, are easily shamed. So use what they're using against you to, yeah, just mock them. I think that they weren't ready for that. The Democrats still have no fucking idea what happened to them. And it's Russia. It's like, no, you missed it. Like, it's going to get worse for you if you continue to miss it. Like, show some insight, like, as to what happened. And they're clueless about this. But I think it gets more and more insane because whatever advances or changes they wanted, they got them all. There's nothing left, so they have to find microaggressions and, you know, nanoaggressions, whatever is smaller than a microaggression, that's going to be, or just completely invisible aggressions, like that they just make up.
A quantum mechanical aggression, I guess.
Right. Or neutrino aggressions, whatever the smallest, what they can isolate it to. I mean, where do you see this? I mean, just like a concept like rape culture, are you kidding? Thing is, you look at movies from the 1940s, there's a rape scene in every movie. They might have had a point back then. Rape was just a part of all dramas. I don't remember Marx Brothers or W.C. Fields having... I'm trying to think of a rape comedy, probably not that. But they might have had a point back then. It was just considered more normal. But apart from being a racist or a child molester, I think our culture sees being a rapist as a pretty bad thing. And they just come up with these implausible, ridiculous ideas that they take as mantras and go on with it. Just like the idea of rape has nothing to do with sex. Could have fooled me. Then explain all these penises and vaginas all over the place. They say shit that makes no sense. Or, you know, any disparity is caused by inequality. Like, come on. Yeah. Or gender doesn't exist. That's the shit that triggers me. It's like you're just wrong. You're wrong and you're dumb and you're ruining people's lives over. Beyond that, I wouldn't get concerned. Yeah.
Well, but they are going after more, Jim. I mean, they have by no means settled, right? So what's happening right now in New Orleans, the protests in Virginia, of course, a lot of people are coming out and calling these KKK rallies just because people come out in defense of these monuments. What's your take on this? You told me a story before we started about there was a Stone Mountain, right? There was a big carving on that.
Yeah, and what was it, summer of 2016? Yeah, I went, because side of Stone Mountain, I think the geological term is a monolith, and it's one of the biggest in the world. It's just a giant granite slab, where the Klan, about 100 years ago, used to do cross burnings at night, which, you know, pre-electricity, this was pretty effective political theater. And there's a carving on the side of Stone Mountain that's Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, and Stonewall Jackson that's actually bigger than the carving at Mount Rushmore.
Interesting.
And that's like where it was. Yeah, there's the carving on Stone Mountain. And I went there, and there was a rally. People wanted a rally for the Confederate flag, and I went there to check it out. And it was mostly peaceful except for this Tommy Massimino or whatever the hell his name is. He was the same pig who went after Trump at some airport in Ohio back when he was on the campaign trail, tried to attack him and got nabbed immediately. But he turns out, of course, he's the rich kid's son of some high-ranking Democrat in Atlanta. But he was there, you know, fat and bearded, ripping up the Confederate flag, taunting. Like, the only trouble in any of these is always that side. Nobody's harassing anybody except those assholes. You know, and I guess if you want to try to transcend the left-right continuum, I hate meddlesome people. People that just stick their business in everyone else's business. Like, what do you... And, The miraculous thing was I saw Georgia Representative Hank Johnson there, top five dumbest people in Congress. This is the guy who thought the island of Guam would capsize if the Marines sent too many soldiers over there. There he is. But I was pleasantly surprised. I saw him, and I was excited. I'm like, wow, there he is in the flesh. And I went up and talked to him. I'm like, what do you think about all this? He's like, ah, it's history, man. Leave it alone. Like, this is people history. If it was a government... You know, I think Stone Mountain's privately owned. The park is. So just leave it alone. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, you're dumb, but, you know, you at least are kind of open-minded, not fanatical. But not like the virtue-signaling fat white kid who had no stake in the matter and is out stomping on the flag. And I wonder if he even got a day for trying to attack Trump. I doubt that he did.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that, actually. It's very, very bizarre that he got off in the way he did. But, you know, what do you think about, I mean... Surely white people just coming out in defense of their forefathers who built the South, etc. How can the left, how can the media establishment go after these people and call them racists and call them, you know, it was that Virginia rally where they had a torchlit march, right, for the Robert E. Lee statue and everything else. That turned into a KKK rally all of a sudden. I mean, this is ridiculous, right?
Well, they're hyperbolic. Everything that they don't believe in, anything, anyone who mildly disagrees with them is a fascist and a Nazi and a neo-Confederate. They know nothing about this war. They know nothing about the fact that, they don't seem to care that about 620,000 white guys died in this war, even if you want to make it about slavery. And there's a lot of evidence that had nothing to do, or very little to do with slavery, at least from the North side. Lincoln said it had nothing to do with slavery. Lincoln said, if I could preserve the Union without freeing a single slave, I would do it. And if you have an economic interpretation of history, the South was providing, I've heard, anywhere from 75% to 90% of federal income for the U.S. government. They didn't want to let go of that. And over 90% of rebel soldiers never owned a slave. They, you know, as far as I can tell, if you listen to accounts, they were invaded. And they were protecting their land. But they don't want to hear that. You know, just like they're erasing these monuments, but I think the more damaging erasure they've done is they've erased the entire history of poor white people in the South. A significant part of the early sections of my Redneck Manifesto book were tied up in this, about feudalism in Europe and about the white slave trade to America. And they were called that in documents. And from contemporary accounts, they had it worse in a lot of cases than black slaves did, because they were treated like rent-a-cars. You had a term of indenture for 7 years. Significant is the fact that an estimated 50% of those, and they were teenagers, like mid-teens, like 15 and 16-year-olds, they didn't survive the 7 years.
That's right.
And I don't even know if they teach indentured servitude in history class anymore. When I started as a kid, it was like, oh, Thomas Jefferson will teach you how to run a printing press, and then you start your own. It was this, you know, great apprentice. No, it was brutal. And they had organized criminal gangs that would kidnap kids in England.
Jim, now you're also talking about a racist thing. Here's Aspilsy explaining to us, right, that this is a myth of how Irish slaves, you know, quote unquote, became a favorite meme of race. See, we can't even defend ourselves anymore, right? This, even our expression of finding ways of attacking the left and attacking them on their issues, let's just call it racist. That's good.
Okay, right? That's from 2016. I contacted the expert, Michael A. Hoffman, and had him destroy what they said. I mean, look at the tactics. You know, first they go for motive. Well, it's only used for racists to cover their hatred. It's like, well, okay, foul right there. I would blow the whistle, throw the flag. You have no idea why anyone – I don't know why the Southern Poverty Law Center does anything. I don't want to crawl inside their sick minds and figure out why they do things. I just want to know if what they're saying is true or not. So they'll do things like, oh, they found some picture that someone misused online. It's like, these aren't Irish slaves. These are actually Southern whites in the 1930s working on a cotton plantation. Okay, so some idiot who has a small website miscaptioned a picture. That doesn't make everything a myth. You can go, there are reams of documentation about the brutality of indentured servitude and which was called slavery back then. From, and what's fascinating is you could, you know, I guess Hoffman would be considered far, far Jew-baiting right. And, but you have Marxist historians like Howard Zinn and Eugene Genovese who say the same thing. And they'll not only say that it was, you know, there's Hoffman's
books. Hoffman's books, yes. They're trying to combat the arguments made by people like us, basically. Yeah.
Because he did a 2,000-page book about the Talmud, so I guess he's not a favorite people.
That's true.
But, I mean, yeah, it's not just Hoffman. So, but that's, it's easy to see that what they do retort. They can find somebody who says untoward about Jews. Well, there you go. Have to prove that there were no Irish slaves. But there are reams of documentation. I think Moll Flanders by Daniel Defoe was about a white slave. It's all there. I mean, they used to do movies about this stuff, but not anymore. And there, I mean, people don't know about the Barbary slave trade where Muslims raided European coasts for, I think, a century or two and, you know, took millions and transported them into the Middle East for slavery. Or the slave trade under the Ottoman Empire. The word slave comes from Slav because, you know, so many of the indigenous Slavs of that area were captured and sold into slavery by conquering Muslims.
Yeah.
Why can't you talk about that? So I did an interview with Hoffman and put it on Tacky's Mag, and he just, yeah, piece by piece, he eviscerated them. And I set up, I'm like, would you like to debate someone from the Southern Poverty Law Center about that? And he said, of course I would, but they would not, you know. You find this with these people too. Well, no platform. I don't want to give like a racist, an evil, sinister moron like that. So, but you will never shut up about them. You will spend 10 times as much time trying to but you don't have the courage to just face them.
If right.
You're an idiot.
Yep.
Like, should be easy. No.
I mean, they're not going to win their position doing this. They're not going to. This is what they don't understand. The more they just try to shut us out or shut us down or just not debate. They're not the ones advancing, right? I mean, we're gaining on them, not the opposite way, I'd say.
They introduce these ideas. Even, I mean, think about it. Like, Nazis have been, they weren't these evil characters in American pop culture in the 60s. You had Hogan's Heroes, or so the bumbling idiot, you know, Nazi guards at this camp. They have Hogan and his guys, or Eric von Zipper and the bikers of the Frankie and Annette Beach movies. These were the only Nazis you saw back then. But then the Nazis became more sinister and the ultimate evil. And this narrative was reframed where the only people, or just by omission, you get the impression the only people killed in World War II were Jews.
Yeah.
I don't even think there's, I'm sure there's people who spent lifetimes and been absolutely ruined questioning the numbers and the techniques. No, I'm nowhere near an expert on any of that, but I think what's easier is to say, well, you mentioned these 6 million. What about the other 60 million that died in that war?
Why does it matter? Details. They're not chosen, so who cares?
They should have stopped what they were doing. It's like these people are just rank conformists. They're going with the flow now. They're going where the power is. You all would have been Nazis back then because that's the way they act. They go with the herd because it's safe. And I understand there's a survival instinct there, you know, but they just don't have any core. They'll just go, Hitler came over and took it. Yeah, sure, they bow immediately, or Islam or any of it. So,
yeah.
Oh, the German citizen, it's like, oh, what do the German citizens do to deserve being firebombed in Dresden or raped by 2 million Russian soldiers? Really? Yeah. Like, you can spread the guilt around that much? In my experience, most people really don't have any effect over what their leaders do.
No.
And we can segue that into Trump right now if you want to. But yeah, I mean, I've never really had much of a say in anything. The only person I ever voted for who won was Trump.
Did you vote in the past at all, or did you stay away altogether?
First time I voted was in 1980. I voted for John Anderson, who was an independent. It was Reagan versus Carter then. And then I think I voted for the loser Mondale in 84. I think I voted for Dukakis in 88, then a Libertarian in 92. I sat out a couple. Trump I voted for. The only other Republican I ever voted for was a woman in Decatur, Georgia, who was running against the idiot Hank Johnson, who thought that Islands could capsize, because I had this compulsion. I don't think a guy who's that dumb should get $174,000 for life. You know, people reported for being that dumb. But he won anyway, because it's like an 80% black county. So.
That's identity politics on that regard for you. Before we move on to Trump, let me just read the first. You have a quote from C.S. Lewis opening in the book, and it's really good. C.S. Lewis is one of my favorites. For those who don't know, of course, he's very similar to a certain extent to Tolkien. He went to the same, they studied together and things like this. Very, you know, Christian motifs, but a lot of more metaphysical, kind of esoteric concepts in it. But the quote you have is this: of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It would be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity may at some point be satiated. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us to without end, for they do so with approval of their own conscience. Right? So it's this issue again that they're morally correct. They are entitled to do exactly what it is that they need to do and want to do because they are in the right.
I mean, the most dangerous people throughout history are the ones who just unquestionably believe they're on the side of good. But it's also the meddlesomeness. I wish I could find whatever anonymous commenter was on Tacky's about 5 years ago. It's the best comment that was ever left there. He said, forget about left, right, communist, fascist, libertarian, socialist. Big political divide is people who want to be left alone and people who won't leave you the hell alone. that sums it up for me. I mean, I guess the other big axis is, do you believe in innate equality or don't you? I don't. I don't think there's any evidence for it. I think it's a dangerous concept. And we'll have Kurt Vonnegut's Harrison Bergeron pretty quickly. Do you know that story?
No.
Kurt Vonnegut was a dystopian science writer.
Yeah, no Vonnegut, but not the story. Tell us.
Was set in the future, and everyone had to be equal. So if you were a faster runner, you had to wear like a 40-pound bag so you would be as fast as everyone else. And that's what they're doing now. They're not they talk about a level playing field. That doesn't seem like they want to tilt the playing field so everyone gets
So the lowest common denominator, right? It's about bringing everyone down to the lowest level.
I think the end result of it too. And there are people who are socially wired and people who aren't. And maybe it's just like bees. Bees do different functions. Maybe you need the tribal people to, you know, build bridges, and maybe you need the lone geniuses or tinkerers and inventors and stuff who need to be away from people. I mean,
yeah.
I think I read Mein Kampf like 5 or 6 years ago on an iPhone while going to work for a Jewish boss because got accused of being a Nazi so often. It's like, all right, let's see what the owner's manual says. He said as much, too. He says, you know, he wasn't a herd type of guy. He's like, you know, let the geniuses tinker. And you know, his opinion was most advances were by solo individual people who, like, stood outside the herd and invented things. And I tend to think that's true. I think.
Well, look at how far ahead they got, right? In the few, what is it, seven-year time span that they got? I mean, look at the advancements. Even the NASA space program wouldn't be anything if they didn't bring the Nazi space scientists over, right?
Nazis, like such a, I mean, talk about an over, I hope that becomes a word that's overused into oblivion too. I mean, it's such a very specific term, but people use it with impunity. Everyone's a Nazi. Milo's a Nazi, like a guy who blows black guys and is Jewish apparently. Like, what are the Nazis just lower their entry standards? Or what the,
you know, there was some Jewish Nazis, weren't they? Like, Rosenberg, or, you know, I don't know.
You know about Dan Burroughs?
Yeah, I recognize that. Remind me.
He was a member of George Lincoln Rockwell's American Nazi Party in the 60s, lived in the barracks with Rockwell. He had his own magazine called Kill with an exclamation point. It's like, we must take the Jews and slaughter them. And he was, you know, a true believer all the way. And, then one night in the mid-60s, a reporter from the New York Times contacted him and agreed to meet at some deli in Queens. And they met there, and he told Burroughs, well, I have information that you were bar mitzvahed, and I'm going to write that in the New York Times tomorrow. And Burroughs never lived to see that headline because he killed himself. You get some of the, it's weird, there's Jewish self-hatred is an interesting thing. he took it to the hoop. And I mean, there's a writer for Tacky's now, David Cole, who was a Holocaust revisionist for a while.
Yep.
And got hounded to where he had to fake his own death by Irv Rubin and the JDL, beat up and threatened, like, repeatedly. Yeah, Jewish, I mean, there's white self-hatred. There's definitely Jewish self-hatred, too.
That is correct, absolutely. Yeah, some of the best, someone said some of the best Nazis are Jewish, right? but it's also the stereotypical, this is the point that you mentioned before. They've turned into this kind of 60s, 70s, almost comic book version of evil, right? A dumb portrayal of evil, which they really weren't like that. But some of the best, you know, kind of Nazis today, those who go out and spray like a swastika on a synagogue or something like that. I mean, they happen to be Jewish, most of them, right? It's these false flag hate attacks.
As far as I know, that whole wave of anti-Semitic church desecrations and graffiti, the only two people I know that they've arrested were a black reporter for The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's site. Juan Thompson was his name. He apparently got pissed off at some white ex-girlfriend and went on this anti-Jew jihad. And then the other one was like some Israeli kid who was responsible for like 100 threats to Jewish centers. I don't think they've arrested anyone who's, you know, goyim yet. But we'll see. I guess the black guy's technically goyim according to the Talmud. But
right.
Yeah, it's either like Jewish people planting these or non-whites acting like Nazis. It's such a weird, I mean, I hope someone does a comedy about a hate crime hoax or worse. Maybe I'll look into that because I want to move more toward fiction anyway. Someone who just needs to be, local rabbi.
Rabbis spray painting swastikas on their own home. Let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, that's really the issue, right? That in this attention economy that we're in right now, and victim economy, whoever is, you know, abused the most and attacked the most, they get higher ranking, right? So it's very important that if the hate and evil doesn't exist out there, let's create it. It kind of creates a culture like that, doesn't it?
It's almost this inversion of what morality used to be. I noticed, like, when punk rock came along, I was, like, in my mid-teens, I was a raging hardcore Christian. And I remember seeing in Parade magazine, which they used to give out with just about every Sunday paper in the U.S., there was a picture of the Sex Pistols. And it was, like, I remember seeing it. They had a midget with them, and I'm like, this is vile. This is, you know, this is the end of civilization. And now, you know, Kurt Cobain and Sid Vicious, they're almost like saint-like characters. They took gays, which were considered the height of immorality, they're sanctified. They took everything that was considered filthy and made it holy. It's like, hey, guys, how about you just get rid of that whole filthy, holy duality and just see things for how they are? But no, that's my beef, too. It's like they didn't, they think they're fighting like some old demons, but they just switch costumes. It's the same psychological script, and it plays into evolutionary psychology, and our group's the good one, and these are the bad ones. It's like, not my style.
Yeah. You have a chapter called How to Deal with the Brainwashed, right? So what's your concept of how we should we talked about kind of ridiculing them. Is that really just the most effective way, you think?
I did a mini book a couple years ago called The Headache Factory about people, because I was a much more notorious figure a decade or two ago. And you get these fans, and you don't realize until it's too late that a lot of them are borderline personality disorder. And they would go on these whole campaigns. Some of them lasted like 3 or 4 years where they contacted everyone I knew and said, I'm going to reveal that he's an anti-Semite or this or that. And it was nothing. They were never exposing or revealing anything that I hadn't already revealed about myself. But then I noticed, like, if you would just turn it a little bit on them, and because I know on Gavin has a site called Street Corners, there was one guy who was harassing the hell out of both of us. He claimed that he had a picture of Gavin passed out drunk where at a party where some black guy put his dick in Gavin's mouth. Gavin said, like, you know, if that picture existed, I'd get laid more often because my wife is a big fag hag, you know, whatever. And he was going to reveal that I was an anti-Semite because I recommended Culture of Critique on some Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nothing, I'm like, what does he think, like, is he going to ransom? And he's like, you know, I can make this hard for you. I can, you know, let's just put this. So all we did was we just took his threats and his texts and made an article out of it. He freaked the hell out. You know, please remove this. Please, I will leave you. Sorry. And this happened with a couple of them where they went after to expose me. But, like, you just shine a light on them. They run and hide forever. And it's like, wow, so they're using against me what they thought would work, but it's actually what would work against them.
Interesting. So, like a projection thing. They think, let's do the worst thing imaginable to him, right?
But they're just projecting, like, this is what, because in each case, just shining a light on them, it got rid of them. Like, they left me alone.
Yeah.
So they were humiliated. You know, the girl I went to prison over who was violent and everything, Spin Magazine did a whole, like, six-page article about it, and they wrote in there that, which actually happened, she ate dog shit, spit it at me. And they made that a pull quote. Like, Ryan shoved droppings from Ghost Chihuahua in her mouth and spit them in his face. And she was all, I mean, I saw her online, oh my God, imagine, you know, the rest of your life, you gotta be the girl who ate dog shit. And, but she tried to do all this to me. And, so I noticed this pattern here. It's like people try to hurt you with what's gonna hurt them. So, if their whole deal is public shaming, it's pretty obvious. I know on tackies, whenever I address one of these people, I always show a picture. Because they, you know, their picture mocks them more than I ever could. They're mostly deformed, inadequate, bitter, you know, fat. And it's like, so okay, so I've taken a tip from all these experiences. The best way is just humiliate them. You know, bully them. But, you know, and it's what they want anyway. They're just, I think in a lot of cases, I try to avoid mind reading, but I think these are people who were abused in high school or made fun of because they were weird. Got mosquitoes in here. Church cat. But obviously, you know, they're I think they're working out their own issues on other people, what happened to them, and they're just striking back. It's like, well, don't do it to me because I'm pretty good at insults. I think my insults will cut deeper than yours.
There's a great one in the book, you know. There's some good cutting sentences and just like going straight to the core of the issues. I love your writing style.
Nice.
It's excellent.
I don't think that's exclusive to the left. I think it's just whoever has the cultural power is going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was a fan of the church ladies of the 80s who were finding Satan everywhere, or, you know, I mean, my magazine went on trial, but actually that's kind of where it tipped. Because you had the 80s, you had the satanic panic and everything, but then I did a magazine called Answer Me in the early 90s, and the fourth issue was about rape, and it was as vile as you could imagine. But come on, it's about rape. But a college feminist took it to the women's center, who took it to the DA, and they started obscenity proceedings against the newsstand who sold it. But I remember there was a Usenet news group back then, alt.zines, where this, you know, before there was much of an internet, people would go to Kinko's and publish their zines and send them out. Church Lady Lemonade. But I remember when I announced that we were facing an obscenity trial with all those redneck Republicans up in Washington State. I'm like, no, this is a college feminist doing this. And that's when it started to tilt, and the people who were witch hunting increasingly became leftists. But I've only, you know, after all these years, only finally started reading the Black Book of Communism. They went after everybody back then. You know, it was considered a class enemy, with the same just vile, dehumanizing, demonizing. That's, I mean, what fascinates me, and it's kind of comical, but it wasn't so tragic. You know, the way they talk about racists is the way that racists supposedly think about blacks and Jews. You subhuman, knuckle-dragging,
right,
and die out, and you're going to go to hell. These sick, sadistic fantasies. It's like, well, what? I thought you were against hate.
No,
oh,
they're not.
White people you're hating.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
By their
definition, right? I've said it so many times, but it bears repeating because, they can think what they do about us because we supposedly hate other people or so, or we don't believe in equality or something, which means we don't think everyone is the same or equal or whatever. So they are you know, against us because we have that position. We're the hateful ones, therefore. But that very definition then. They are hating us, right? Which puts them in the same place, in the same position, which gets us back to this one-way tolerance kind of bullshit that, you know, we've heard about before. This is where it ends up. There's no arguing with these people. I mean, look at what Antifa is doing out on the streets right now. I mean, they cover up. They're up to no good. They just want to violently go after people. They're cowards. Want to beat people up. There's no dealing with these people, is there?
I wish that, maybe they can do it by a blood pressure. Maybe, or there's got to be some way to quantify a physical reaction of hatred. Because I swear, you could flash pictures of Jews and blacks, and it wouldn't get anywhere near the response if you showed me some progressive lecturing asshole. That's when my blood pressure would go through. And I tried to explain this in many articles, like, no, I hate you. Like, no, you don't. You hate blacks. It's like, okay, I give up. Like, because you can't win an argument where someone's telling you what's inside your head. Because if you say, no, you're wrong, well, you're just lying. And it's just this endless loop. That's so much political discourse. And they train me that in journalism school. Don't do that. Don't say why they're doing it, because you don't have to speculate all you want. But I think the best thing to do, you know, just, well, here's where your argument's wrong. I don't really care about you as a person enough to say you're bad or good or why you're doing it. I don't care. But you're wrong anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I think that, it, you know, there might have been intelligence disparities or technological advancement disparities that might have played a part in why Africa was so easily colonized. You know, and it's funny that I even have to choose my words on this show because, you know, maybe it was something else, but that's what they teach in journalism school too. Like, don't ever say anything settled. As far as I can tell, that, you know, maybe there's things that had to do with Africa and sub-Saharan Africans that may have made it easier to colonize that than anywhere else. They never conquered Afghanistan. They only conquered China temporarily. You know, maybe there are differences that have nothing to do with hate and racism, all these sins. They're phantasms. I mean, you have grown adults hate. Hate explains everything. That's really juvenile. You know, maybe, you know, different groups of people fighting over resources. Maybe that has more to do with it. You know, some people sense that they're losing power. That's what all this, oh, you white people are just afraid of losing power. It's like, well, who in their right mind would not be afraid of that?
Of course, exactly. That's it. Like, we cannot have territory. We can't have countries that are built by our forefathers. We can't, like, try to maintain that. I just see this, Jim, as them getting us to a position where we back down so that they will win and that we will lose and just back up until we have nothing left. That's what I think they're about.
I mean, people without spines have a special hatred for people who do have spines. I've noticed that too. And you can take this in any angle. When I was in prison, because, you know, my brother was murdered. I mention this a lot, but that shapes a lot of, like, how you view life. He was murdered when I was 8 years old. I don't have this raging lust to kill every criminal. I would love to be put in a room with the guy who killed him, you know, but I don't need to go after everyone. These people are just on this, they just burn scorched earth. I can't tolerate anything. And to me, that suggests that they're really insecure in what they believe. That's another thing, too, with the encroaching hate speech and some things just should never be said. It's like, why? If lower IQs had nothing to do with why sub-Saharan Africa was conquered, can you kindly show me the majority black nation where they're doing better than they are in America? Because
right.
That would allay a lot of my suspicions. And you can ask that as gently as possible. Rather than even bother to find a place, well, you're only saying that because you feel inferior because they're better basketball. It's like, okay, I give up. I can't talk to you. You know, and I think I might be unique in that I came from all that. I was brainwashed into it. I grew up in the 70s. I watched all the Norman Lear comedies and the, you know, edgy SNL when it started and everything. And I saw that world, but sooner or later, it's just pieces of that world fell away and it doesn't add up. And not everything is just white people deciding to be assholes. But that's their history. Well, white people got up one day and decided to be jerks and jerky to everyone and steal all their inventions. And it's like, all right, then show me where they're doing okay without white people. And it's,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's, you sound like a dick kind of for saying that.
No, whatever. I mean, if it's true, it's true, right? And well, I don't think they know what they're getting into. Why is it that they're keep pushing us up against the wall and leaving us no route of escape? That's what I'm seeing, that they're poking at the bear here, you know, with a stick, right? They don't really know what they're getting themselves into, I feel.
There's the poem Wrath of the Awakened Saxon. It's a poem by Rudyard Kipling, who still gets, you know, he's kind of written out of history because he talked about picking up the white man's burden and everything. But the gist of the poem was, you know, it takes a lot to piss off Anglo-Saxons. But once they're pissed off, look out. Yeah, I don't think they know what they're doing. I think in a lot of ways they think that the enemy is so beaten down that they're not going to fight back, and they're puzzled why people are fighting back. And that's dumb. They're naive. Maybe they acted too soon. I don't know. But, I mean, that's kind of the last article I wrote for Tacky was about these childless leaders of Europe. And one thing I wrote on Twitter a couple of years ago, well, the good thing about white people who don't breed is they don't breed. You know, the ones who do breed have a different view about all this stuff. These childless And they all, they're selfish, and most of them are upper middle class, it seems. You get, you know, whites living in trailer parks, they usually have a couple kids at least. They are, you know, they carved out whatever they were going to get of the earth anyway. They don't really have any vision for the future or how it's going to work out. Or maybe they really are that stupid and as ignorant of history that they think that this is all going to end well. I know one of the things that changed my mind is it was in, I think it was like 1989, I interviewed Tom Metzger of the White Aryan Resistance. And I was still, you know, I listened to rap and read Malcolm X and all that stuff. But he asked me to name a multicultural superpower. And I guess, you know, at the time, maybe America was, you know, but I'm really curious to see if it'll last. I don't think it will, and I don't think there's any historical precedent for it lasting. Didn't Rome start to fall when they started taking in barbarians and making them Roman soldiers?
Yeah, the slaves, and you had the servile revolts, three of them, I think, before Spartacus finally more or less finished the job. There is a decadence that sets in. Obviously, slavery is part of it, meaning you outsource the hard labor, you get too comfortable, right? You get lazy and fat, and everything just falls from there.
I think, I mean, and that may be part of it. I think, I hate the term late-stage capitalism. I think, you know, whether it's the late-stage colonialism, maybe, you get this Weimar Republic sort of decadence and childlessness and nihilism. And I say this as someone who's been a nihilist most of my life. When I had a kid, that changed everything, changed the way I viewed everything. A lot of these people, but yeah, a lot of these people who lecture me, and they're always rich whites who lecture me about socialism and communism. So many of them are childless, and they just don't understand what it's like to have a kid. I was growing up in a really, I've never told this story, I don't think, in any interview. My son's 8 now. When he was 2 years old, me and my wife were both working, and we had to take him to a daycare. And we lived in a predominantly black area. And we took him to this daycare that was black run, and she went to pick him up. He was only there for 2 days. And they had surveillance cameras everywhere. She tells me the 2 days she picked him up, both times he was out on the playground crying both times she went to pick him up. And after the second day, she took him home, and he had bruises on his biceps, like finger marks, like somebody had held him down really forcefully. And she asked the headmistress, like, what the hell's going on? And the woman said, you Caucasians bruise easily.
Oh, God.
And being a felon, you know, I didn't want to burn down the place or kill anybody. We immediately took him out of there. But if you're some upper middle class communist with no kids, you don't want to place him in a school district where he might just get beaten up for being Caucasian. You start to have to worry about these sort of things. And you know, I had a falling out with a friend of a long time who was very left-leaning, but he was lecturing me about, you know, not sending my kid to public schools and everything. It's like, not your say, you know? And, just so you don't try to politics shame me, I'm going to have my kid beat up? No. That's just not how I operate. You know, but there's so many of them are clueless. Just, I always remember, I wrote about this in the Redneck Manifesto when the Oklahoma City bombing happened. There was all this talk about militias, and every book about militias was written by the Southern Poverty Law Center or a sympathizer. And there was he was a Jewish lawyer from New York, Kenneth Stern. He wrote a book called A Force Upon the Plain, the America Militia Movement and the Politics of Hate. And his son, according to him, the night the Oklahoma City bombing happened, his son asked him, Daddy, why? And he bent down and patted him on the back and said, it's because they hate too much. And, you know, this is a Jewish lawyer from New York City writing about farmers in Montana. What does he know about them?
Nothing.
Why is he an expert? He couldn't be further removed. Shouldn't they get a farmer with a degree in English to explain it
right
to people? You have a lot of these people who are, you know, Southern Poverty Law Center. They're located in Montgomery, Alabama, but there's nothing Southern about these guys. They're definitely not impoverished. They know the law, you know, but, they misrepresent, like, these are advocates for, you know, they're considered meddlesome, but I'm sure, like, a lot of black people, get the hell out of here. Like, I have a friend in North Carolina. He says that his family comes from sharecroppers. And a generation or two ago, there were three families on a farm in their little shacks. It was either two black families and one white family or two white families and one black family. He says they all got along until Yankees came down and tried to stir up resentment. a lot of these people are interlopers and meddlers, you know, just poking their nose in places where it's like, you know, mind your own business. I think that's one thing the South values more, is people minding each other's business.
Yeah.
You know, a place like Berkeley, everyone's up, you know, California is just hopeless. That's probably, I would say Florida is my least favorite state just because it's psychotic and no one's from there. And, you know, if you get get somebody eating someone else's face at a Walmart, that's going to be from Florida. But California is just hopeless, I think. And that will probably be the first state to secede. Good riddance. Beautiful, beautiful state topographically, but they got more than they bargained for. I was in L.A. I lived in L.A. from 87 to 94. And from what I heard, the quotient of Latinos, which is a kind of a bad word because there's nothing Latin about these people, from 87 to 94, from what I read, it went from 17 to 43% Mexican. It was a huge change. And right before I left, there was a ballot initiative that would deny illegal aliens free health care. And I remember, this was right before I moved out of California, and you'd be at a stop sign, and they protesters running through the streets, draping Mexican flags on your car. I mean, dumb move. Like, if you wanted to get the law, like, put an American flag, like, at least pretend you like to be American.
Right.
But at the time, I'm thinking, hey, I'm legal, and I work full-time, and I don't have health insurance. Like, what the hell, what are you crying about? You know? But, yeah, California's behind the resistance and everything else. Good luck to them, man. Fall off into the sea or build a wall.
Yeah, well, that's just it. They're probably going to build a wall at some point if they do succeed. That would be funny. That would be in mid-border protection.
And the ironic thing is all these people are worried about the, what is it, Gini, I don't know how you pronounce it, G-I-N-I coefficient, which measures wealth inequality.
Mm-hmm.
Last I read, the highest in the nation is in California.
Yeah.
It's basically a state of, like, tech wizards and Mexican peasants.
Hollywood producers, maybe some of it, but yeah.
Yeah, with like no middle class at all.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a great place. You know, some of the art, like that Jetson style post-World War II architecture, I'm sure California in the 50s and 60s was fantastic, but it just changed drastically in the 7 years I was there. I can't even imagine what it's like now.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, let's just plug your book here a little bit at the end of the first segment, and then we continue. Much more I wanted to talk about in the book, but obviously The New Church Ladies is the book that we're primarily talking about. It came out here very recently. Get a copy on Amazon. Is it better to get it through your website directly, Jim? Does it benefit you more?
I get more money, you get them signed. That's the difference. JimGo.net, that's right on the homepage. You can order them through that. Or go through the, what is it, Jeff Bezos, Amazon. Make him richer. Sure, Amazon.
No, don't do that. I'm sorry I showed that Amazon link, folks. No, but do get it through the website, ladies and gentlemen, JimGo.net. Check out the other writings there, too. What else was it that when you answer me? That's new out as well. What else was
it? Yeah. I mean, it's not technically new because it was a magazine done. 4 issues, 1 each year from 91 through 94. Maybe still what I'm best known for. Caused all kinds of scandals and obscenity trial, shooting at Francisco Martin Duran, a disgruntled ex-soldier shot at the White House in 1994 and quoted the line from Answer Me. There were 3 British kids who were described by the British press as neo-Nazis who killed themselves in 95, and one of them sent me her life savings. If she'd actually read the suicide part of the intro to the suicide issue, she would have realized, I said, if you're suicidal, don't. Maybe if you're not, maybe you should, because you have suicidal people have the insight to how dismal and dreary and unfair the human condition can be, so maybe you're a little valuable that you have that insight. So
right.
It's the fat idiots driving around aimlessly in their cars who maybe should kill themselves. It caused all kinds of really weird scandals. The suicide issue, maybe most of all, Kurt Cobain, the guy who did the cover of the reprint, also did the cover of issue 3, which had Hitler surrounded by the word suicide freaks. And he tells me he worked for Fantagraphics Comics in Seattle. He got backstage at the last Nirvana concert in Seattle like 2 months before Kurt Cobain killed himself by handing out Answer Me and other comics. And he tells me he saw Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love looking at the suicide issue on a couch. And the centerfold was a guy who blew his head off with a shotgun. 2 months later, Kurt Cobain blew his head off with a shotgun. No idea if there was any was there or not.
Are you MK mind control programming these people, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, you're on all kinds of lists once this happens. But the creepiest thing that happened was, and it wasn't entirely coincidental, because her mother died of ovarian cancer, and in 1989 she had a benign ovarian cyst that dissolved. But my wife at the time, Debbie, the first article in the suicide issue is she calls Jack Kevorkian the suicide doctor. We got his number. This is when he was in the news every day, like killing people with a suicide machine. And she called him and said, hey, I have ovarian cancer. What do I do? How do I kill myself? And he was pretty much by the book and compassionate. And he's like, don't worry about it. Worrying's the worst thing you can do. Send me your medical records and we'll take it from there. And then four years later, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and died from it, which is really probably the most haunting thing. But it's, like, in many ways, almost seems like a cursed magazine. It's already weird. And it was a small circulation, 13,000 copies, like, at the peak, but caused all sorts of bad mojo.
Interesting. All right. Well, pick it up on your own, what do you call it, on your own risk then, folks. I mean, don't join the 27 Club. If you're 26 and want to buy the magazine or musician, don't do it. You know, that's
right,
what I say.
Right.
No, but that's good.
People ask if I'll ever do another one. It's like, well, it was three elements. It was me, Debbie, and L.A. I don't live in L.A. anymore, and Debbie's dead, so it would just be, it reminds me of one of these, like, nostalgia. You get the bass player from the Temptations to go out as the Temptations.
Yeah, right. So. I see what you mean, yeah.
The fifth issue was supposed to be about race, but
okay.
All these scandals. So I've just written about race for, like, seven straight years now.
Yeah.
And eventually...
Whoops, yeah, we just lost Jim right there. He was, I think his battery ran out in his phone, his backup, so his connection is down. So I'll just close off the first segment here. Again, just to plug the new Church Ladies, that's the book we're talking about here. Do get your hands on a copy of that. We'll just take a short break. We'll try to reconnect with Jim and do a second segment with that here in a little bit. Right, folks, just concluded the second segment with Jim Goad, a great segment. If you want to check that out, definitely go to redicemembers.com, our members' website. Sign up for a membership with us. You can listen to the second hour or watch it. You can also check out any of the other shows that we've done back to our start in 2006. We have a live TV show that we do on the weekends. We have videos. We have inside episodes, old webcasts, tons of different stuff for you in the members section. And we are just about to finalize the update on the members' website as well. So head on over to redicemembers.com. Sign up for a membership. That's the best way to support us. We don't have ads. You know, we don't have any blinking website banners, anything like this. We don't even monetize our videos on YouTube. We are depending on you being there, signing up. We're there depending on you sustaining your membership so that we can grow. We can bring on more reporters. We can continue to expand and grow, but get a bigger studio space here eventually. So we have a lot of things in the works in terms of us expanding, and we do need your help to do that. So definitely sign up for a membership with us. Thank you so much. We'll take a short break right here. Then we'll be back with the second hour together with Jim Goad. We'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks.